Support for this podcast comes from Frito-Lay and the 2023 Snack Bracket Championship. The Frito-Lay Snacker Challenge is underway, and fans are voting on their favorite snacks to crown champion. We're talking about primetime matchups between the best 64 snacks in the land. Will Ruffles Ridges reign supreme? Can Doritos defend their dynasty? Or will Smart Food use their smarts for a surprise upset? Only you can decide. Get in on all the action for a chance to win up to $1,000 or a year's worth of snacks. Let your snacks be heard. Just go to FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com to vote and enter for a chance to win. No purchase necessary. Sweepstakes ends April 3rd, 2023. Void where prohibited. Year's worth of snacks awarded in the form of 52 coupons, each good for one bag of chips. See official rules at FritoLaySnackIt.SBNation.com.
Hey everyone, this is Laz Jackson of Detroit Bad Boys, and on this week's episode, Ben Gulker and I talk about what we saw from the Pistons in Las Vegas. We go over Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren's obvious athletic gifts, preview Isaiah Stewart and Isaiah Livers' role during the regular season, and Ben has a conspiracy theory about Killian Hayes' lone summer league appearance. As always, we appreciate your continued support of the podcast. The best way to do that is to share, subscribe, and leave comments. Please leave comments on the discussion post on Detroit Bad Boys. That's the best way for us to have the conversation that we want to have around the podcast. In order to do that, though, you have to follow DetroitBadBoys.com, which you should be doing because it's the best place on the internet for Pistons news and analysis this season. With all that said, it's time to go to work. Hello, everyone. Welcome to this week's episode of the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. I am your host, Lazarus Jackson. Pleased, as always, to be joined by my usual co-host, Ben Gulker. How's it going, Ben?
Laz, we're back. Summer League is over. We're a week closer to what? What's next, Laz? Preseason? We're a week closer to preseason. Hard to believe.
Yeah.
I'm doing pretty good. How are you doing, Laz?
I'm doing well. It was funny. I was looking at the folder I keep all the podcast files in, and well, not all of them. I go back and delete anything that's like older than 18 months because I don't think we'll need it or anything. But there's like this huge gap between July and October. It's like, oh yeah, that's right. Like that's what we have ahead of us.
The doldrums.
Yes. Not much to do but argue about some stuff we hope happens in the not distant future. But before we get to that, though, we should talk about Summer League. We should talk about how the Pistons finished 3-2 in Las Vegas Summer League. They still have one more game left to play. I don't know when that game is, and none of the people we are going to talk about today are playing in it. And so I would not blame you if you did not watch that game like a sicko. Ben, let's talk about Jaden Ivey and Jalen Duren. Let's give the people what they actually want to hear. So You were a little bit more pessimistic about Jaden Ivey than a lot of people. There were a lot of comments about that on that podcast. You jumping in there to defend yourself. I'm jumping in there to defend you as well. And then Jaden Ivey comes out and has a really impressive Las Vegas Summer League experience, by my opinion. What did you think of him and his play?
Yeah, so unfortunately, didn't get to see enough of it, right? Fortunately, he is not injured seriously. You know, I took a look at the injury report just across the summer league before we recorded this morning, and gosh, so many people, bumps and bruises, and you know, lots of the big names from summer league sitting out after playing just two or three games due to minor injuries. Of course, we saw a couple more serious injuries as well. So feeling fortunate that Ivy's injury is not serious, but I think for me, the main takeaway is, you know, we certainly saw that the athleticism that was obviously the thing everybody was so hyped about, you know, obviously that is real, right? It's not like Ivy was just athletic at the Big Ten level, which is not a conference known for its athleticism necessarily, right? Like he is real in terms of his athleticism. When he gets the ball in transition in space, he goes, and he goes hard. And you know, obviously there are going to be some guys in the NBA who have that sort of athleticism and can keep up with him. But it's pretty clear, right? He's going to be one of the most athletic guys on the floor, you know, even at the next level. And that's pretty exciting. The Pistons have not had players like that very often in their entire history. This is going to be something that's a treat for fans to see. You know, some of the explosive dunks in transition, the alley-oops in transition, I mean, all of that stuff, there's going to be some highlight reels, and that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. So all of that stuff that we were hoping is real is certainly there, and that's going to be a blast to see. He's still rough around the edges. I mean, there's some ball handling stuff that he's going to need some time to develop, and that's going to be a thing that he needs to work on. You know, the mid-range game is not there yet. That's mm-hmm. going to be a work in progress, I think, over time. I don't know. Let's tell me what you think about the three-point shooting. I was a little bit encouraged that time. I think there might be it might be the case that his three-point shot is a little further along than maybe some of that late drop-off that we saw in his sophomore season suggests. Maybe he's going to be a little bit more NBA-ready in terms of his three-point shot. That would be a huge plus. Like, if he's more of an NBA-ready three-point shooter than maybe we were a little concerned about, that would be huge. But, you know, overall, in the little bit that we saw, there's certainly a lot to be excited about over the long term for sure. You know, even if we see some growing pains early. So that's my main takeaway for sure.
Yeah. The three-point shooting was interesting for me because, like, in the first game, he went 2 of 5. And, like, that's a good ratio. That's 40%. We like to see that. The two makes looked really good. The two misses looked really bad. And so I wonder about consistency with that, right? Like, maybe he gets to a point where he is an immediate, like, low 30s, mid 30s three-point shooter, but teams will not treat him like one because it's safer to let him shoot threes than let him attack the basket, which is what he's much, much better at. The mechanics looked fine. They looked very similar to what we saw at Purdue. I was more encouraged that he made, like, all of his free throws. I think he was only mm-hmm. like a 70-something% free throw shooter at Purdue.
Yeah,
and so maybe that portends, like, some improvements, some mechanical stuff or some touch stuff that we'll hopefully see in the future. But yeah, he was really, really impressive. I want to shout out DBB commentator S. Michael 69, who said Ivy got a casual 26-6 off the strength of smashing the meat button. Meep, like the Roadrunner, is like, yes, you could absolutely see how electric Jaden Ivey was in the second half of that first game against Portland in particular, when he's able to get out in transition, when he's able to get out and push the pace, and when he's able to like create havoc a little bit on defense. Like, a couple of transition opportunities were just steals or deflections. And he turns defense into offense really, really quickly. And that's an element the Pistons have been lacking for a very, very long time. And it's really good to see that in play. I wonder if Ivy, like, single-handedly forces teams to play faster, which would be really interesting because, you know, me and you, Ben, we've talked a long time about how the Pistons need to play at pace and how that'd be better for the young guys to see the ball go through the basket a little bit more and just to have stuff happen. But we haven't really had a guard who can dictate the terms of the game at a fast pace, quite like Jaden Ivey. Like, Cade dictates the terms of the game, but he does it at his pace, which is much, much slower. But Ivy's just not, and he's not just an athlete, excuse me. He's not just, like, an athletic guy. In that first game in particular, I think, like, him going up against Keon Johnson is, like, instructive about that. Keon, like, also had 20 points, but he had, like, a much different 20-point game and, like, did not really – he didn't have as much of an impact on the game as Jaden Ivey did. Keon was, you know, one of the more athletic guys in his class a couple years ago, big frame, powerful dunker. But because he doesn't have, like, the ball handling ability Jaden Ivey does, he can't really do a lot of the same stuff in transition. And so you're like, he's a lot more reliant on, like, backdoor cuts or, like, spot up threes or things like that. And so his 20 points didn't feel as dramatic or impactful in the way that Jaden Ivey's did. And I think that was, like, a really, that was a really important comparison for me to make, like, mentally. It's like, okay, just because Jaden Ivey, like, has the meat button and, like, smashes it all the time, it's like, doesn't mean he's, like, only an elite level, like, athlete. With that said, he did have a lot of ugly turnovers. I think he had 5 turnovers in this game. Some of them were him, like, trying to split double teams and tripping. Some of them were passes in the half court before he got really comfortable in the second half. He had some really bad turnovers, throwing the ball directly to defenders at least twice. It's like, that was not great. We should keep that in mind. It's like, again, young guards turn the ball over a lot, and something we saw with Killian, something we saw with Cade. It's like, that's going to continue. But I think my main takeaway with Jaden Ivey after Summer League was that before Summer League, I was not sure if he needed to be in the starting lineup right away. Now, after Summer League, I'm sure, like, yes, he probably needs to start right away. If nothing else, because you need to get him experience playing next to Cade at pace. And you need that fire and ice combination to start working and getting experience working together right away. It's like, that was my main takeaway about Jaden Ivey from Summer League, is that he needs to start. Where are you on the rotation and Jaden Ivey's placing it right now, Ben?
Yeah, the rotation, I'm still in the place where it's like, I can't settle in on any 5-man unit where there's not a glaring weakness.
I know, right?
Yeah. And that's what makes it hard. I think I'm still in favor of coming up with a starting lineup that is geared towards your long-term development. But I think the threading the needle is what Dwayne Casey is going to have to do. There are going to be games where you're going to have to try to win, because I don't think this season is ultimately going to be about winning lots of games, but I still think there are games you're going to want to win, because I don't think you're going to want to go out and win 23 games again this season. I don't think that can be the goal. And I think what that's going to mean is you're going to have to find a closing lineup that's the right mix of veterans and skills. Mm-hmm. And that's going to mean one or two of your young guys who are part of your core are probably going to sit. And that it might not be the same young guys every time, but it probably means Ivy and or Stewart, kind of by my lights, are one of those two guys is probably going to be odd man out in some of those rotations, because you're going to need ball security and or shooting and or some type of interior defense. And I think those skill sets are still very much a work in progress for both of those two guys. So if Ivy is your long-term shooting guard and you're pretty committed to that, and Cade and Ivy are your backcourt of the future, then by all means, start them. But I think I could absolutely see closing units where if Burks doesn't get traded, he slides into that closing unit where you need shooting at the two and maybe you need a little more even-handed defense. I can see units where Olynyk and or Noel, if he doesn't get traded, or both of those guys get traded in favor of Stu, because you want maybe some shot blocking, or maybe you need some stretch at the five if Stu's three-pointer isn't quite there yet. So I could see a lot of shuffling, right, in the last 5 to 7 minutes of the game, in those games where you're really trying to win, instead of trying to make your starting five unit fit, right? Yeah. So I'm kind of hoping that's where Casey ends up. Like, you start your young guys because that's your core. That's the group you're trying to move forward with over the next 3 to 5 years. But you shuffle your closing unit in those moments where you're trying to win games.
That makes a lot of sense. I do think we'll see a lot of vets plus Cade plus shooting ? Lineups when the Pistons are trying to win games, simply because, like, Cade was so good in the clutch. When the Pistons got opportunities to play close games, and Cade was playing, Cade was very good down the stretch of those games. And he was really good with the ball in his hands, so you don't really need another ball handler on the floor in those situations. And so you can do more things like just surround him with perimeter shooting and guys who can defend, and just worry about the development of the other guys for the previous, like, 40 minutes of the game. Absolutely.
I was also thinking a lot about this last night too. Like, I'm thinking about the guys on the roster who love to run, and I'm thinking like Killian, Ivy, and Hami. Like, obviously that 1-2-3 combination can't shoot to save their lives, but like you throw maybe a Linux out there with them and Livers, right? So you get shooting at the 4 and 5. Maybe you're not very good in terms of rebounding, but you have a lot of length at the 1, 2, and 3. You have a lot of athleticism at the 1, 2, and 3. And maybe you're forcing some turnovers and you're running a whole lot. Maybe that could be a whole lot of fun. So like there are some really unorthodox lineups that could potentially be awkward, but maybe awkward in a good way, but also maybe awkward in a really horrible way if things go wrong. So I don't know, man. There's a weird mix of skills right now. And if some trades don't happen, it's going to be awkward, I'm afraid. That's where I'm at with the rotation right now.
Yeah, I think this team is definitely not complete yet, right? And so we'll definitely see some shifts in skill sets, like up and down the roster. But for right now, this does look like a better team than last year, even if we don't know how all the puzzle pieces will fit into place just yet. And even with that said, like I was reading our old friend of the podcast, Joseph Sinke, is back writing again. And he was he had a Nerlens Noel post up on his Patreon. And something he pointed out and something that like I hadn't really considered but is absolutely true is that, you know, we see the Pistons roster and they have a lot of centers right now. They have a lot of big men. But a lot of those big men have been injury prone throughout their careers, right? Like Marvin Bagley has yet to play, I think, 70 games in a season. Kelly Olynyk starting to wear down a little bit. Obviously got injured last year, didn't play the way we wanted him to, and has also like been injured in the past. Nerlens Noel, another guy who has had a lot of like little nagging injuries that's caused him to miss time. Isaiah Stewart's been relatively healthy. And then obviously like Jalen Duren, we can't speak to his endurance and injury like history, but I would doubt that we see him in the rotation right away either. And so, you know, if, you know, one of these veteran big men get hurt, like that obviously changes the look and feel of the rotation to a point where like the lineups are going to have to shift. And so it'll be like, that's something we should probably keep in mind too, is that like the lineups we're thinking about in, you know, October preseason could look a lot different in December after, you know, some injuries or just like the normal wear and tear of a 82 game NBA mm-hmm. season.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. But speaking of the big men though, Ben, Jalen Duren, really impressive to my mind. What did you think of him? And he obviously got to play more games than Jaden Ivey. So we got a little bit more of a look at Duren. What did you think of him and his play during Las Vegas?
Man, does he feel like a Piston or what?
I know.
Oh my gosh. Like, this kid was born to be a Detroit Piston. He belongs in that uniform for sure. Runs the floor, tries to rip the backboard off of the support every chance he gets. This kid is going to be a fan favorite. If for whatever reason you're listening to this podcast and didn't watch any of the Summer League highlights, by all means, please go do that. I can't believe that there's a Venn diagram of people who are listening to the podcast and didn't somehow see Summer League highlights already. But if such people exist, go watch the highlights because it's incredible to see. Kid is ripped. He is strong. He leaps, he jumps, he dunks. He does all of the things. Like, it's like he does the things that you wish. He approaches the rim the way we wished Andre Drummond had approached the rim, mm-hmm. right? Like as a young big man. Super raw. Skill, like fundamentals aren't there yet. There was a clip making the rounds a few days ago where Pistons are defending the free throw line, and Duren gets, instead of boxing out, gets boxed out. He manages to leap over the guy boxing him out and tips the ball, leads to an offensive rebound for the other team. Like, that's the kind of thing that will get him yanked in a heartbeat on a Dwayne Casey team, as it should be. Like, that would be deserved. So those fundamentals are the things he's going to have to learn over the next 6 to 12 months. But when those fundamentals are there and you combine that with this ridiculous athleticism and strength and just drive to do all of the big man things that he's already got all of the talent and athleticism to do. Yeah, I am crazy excited about this kid. I hope his hunger to learn to do all of that fundamental stuff is as deep as ripping the rim off of the backboard, because my goodness, electric. I can't wait until he's ready to catch lobs from our guards, because wow, electric, exciting. I mean, the number of dunks that we could potentially see between him and Bagley and Ivy, like, holy cow, we've never had this kind of athleticism on the roster. This is a, like, a dream come true for jumping and dunking. Like, we've just never had it. So this is super exciting.
Yeah, that's basically everything I was going to say. He's so much fun. And what I liked was that they gave him opportunities to do things like post up and operate from the mid post. He did not have a ton of success when doing that. I think it is good to get those reps during summer league. You know, like, that is why they're here, right? Is to develop aspects of their game that they might not in like live play that you might not otherwise get to, like when the regular season starts. But what I really liked is that he seemed to know his role and want to excel in it. He, like you mentioned, he's trying to rip the rim off the backboard every single chance he gets. But more importantly, like, you don't see him like loitering around in the mid post a lot, like waiting for the ball to like come to him. It's like, no, he is attacking the rim. Like, he has the mentality of a guy who like wants to put the ball like through the floor, on a dunk, like every single time down the floor. And like, that's what you want to see. Right. Defensively, I thought he did a better job than I was hoping, but still not like a great job. The switching scheme the Pistons have employed in the past, you could see how Stewart was a lot more proficient at that scheme than Duren was when both those guys were on the floor at the same time. Duren, of course, is, you know, taller, lot more athletic in terms of like vertical, but Stewart's like a little bit shorter, has got better hips, better lateral mobility, able to stay in front of guys. And you see Duren, like, I think this is pointed out, like, what Duren does a lot of the time on those switches is he tries to let the guy go by him a little bit and then recover and block the shot from behind. It's like that will absolutely work in Las Vegas. He absolutely had a couple guys doing that. It's like, I struggle to see how that works all the time at the NBA level. And so it will be paramount that, like you talked about, he learns more technique to keep guys in front of him, to contest and challenge like with his length and move a little bit more side to side. But also, like, he's so explosive as a rim protector. I hope we see the Pistons employ more drop coverage when he's ready for it, to funnel things into him and have him contest shots around the rim and have him be a guy that dudes are like absolutely terrified to finish around, because he might throw your shot into the third row, or, you know, even better, like he did multiple times at Memphis, he might throw your shot against the backboard and then Jaden Ivey catches it and then we're in transition again, and then like we're seeing more running and jumping and dunking, right? I am really excited about what Jalen Duren is going to look like for this team in like January, February, when we're finally see Dwayne Casey like let him off the leash, like let him play small rotation minutes, especially in bench lineups. Well, like, you think about like Killian's been waiting for a guy who can do this for like his entire NBA career. He's just like, I'm going to throw the ball at the top of the square, go get it. You know, Hamidou Diallo has been looking for a guy like this his entire career. Just like, run with me and we'll just cause some havoc. I'm super excited about Jalen Duren. The trading Jeremy Grant essentially for Jalen Duren appears to be like 100% worth it, you know, 20 minutes into Las Vegas Summer League, which is something I didn't expect I would be saying at this time. It's just, I'm a huge fan. We're both really big on Jalen Duren.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Today's episode is brought to you by Cars.com. With over 2 million vehicles and 50,000 more added every day, Cars.com will match you with the perfect car for you, your budget, your life, your style. And if you're ready to say goodbye to your current car, Cars.com will get you an instant offer to cash it in. Just start by entering your license plate and get matched with a local dealer who will write you the check. So whether you're looking to buy or sell, just go to Cars.com. It's magical.
Playing next to Duren in a lot of lineups, and I think something that was important the Pistons get a look at, Ben, was Isaiah Stewart at the four. Stewart was playing as the single big some of the time, but playing double big next to Jalen Duren a lot of the time. We expect to see Isaiah Stewart playing next to a non-shooter a lot, whether that's Duren, whether that's like a guy like Marvin Bagley, a starting lineup that we did see a lot during last year's regular season. Ben, how did you get a feel for what Isaiah Stewart was able to contribute on both ends as a guy who like wasn't the only big man on the floor?
Oh man, Les, this is tough. I mean, I'm an Isaiah Stewart fan. The thing about NBA big man and shooting is, let's take a guy like Al Horford, right? Gets to the NBA finals. Mm-hmm. He's what, 30 something. I don't know. He's old, right?
Yeah, 34, 35.
He didn't develop a consistent jump, or you can't even call it a jump shot. He didn't a perimeter shot, right? He didn't develop a consistent perimeter shot until well into his NBA career, right? Like, he sort of had a mid-ranger, right? Like a pick and pop or a baseline jumper. You know, it took him a while to get that, but like a consistent long-range shot, right? Like well into his career.
Well, he came into the league at a different time too, right? When right. like got big shooting 20 footers was valuable.
Right, right. A guy like Brook Lopez, you know, Milwaukee Bucks NBA champions 2 seasons ago, mm-hmm. A post scorer, reinvented himself as a 3-point shooter, becomes integral to the Milwaukee Bucks winning an NBA championship. We go down the line. There are a number of big men who, you know, their entire career trajectory, they're taught bang inside, box out, don't shoot anything outside of 8 feet. And then it takes them until their late 20s, early 30s, until they're finally a finished product in terms of their shooting. Why do I say any of that? Because, you know, my concern about Isaiah Stewart and the Pistons is that it just is going to take him a long time to develop this jump shot, and the Pistons give up on him or are forced to give up on him because they've got a guy like Duren waiting in the wings who's just better at the big man stuff than Isaiah Stewart is. And like from a franchise development perspective, that would be okay. But from like the sentimentality of being a fan, I feel like I would be bummed out if that happens. Right. So, you know, there are things that I think Isaiah Stewart is immediately better than Duren at. You hinted at them. All of the team defense stuff in terms of lateral movement, switching, scheming. Like, obviously, Stewart is years better at that than Duren right now, and that's just a function of being in the league longer and learning, etc. But yeah, I mean, Stewart is just not there, in my opinion, as a four. Could he get there? Probably-ish. But I still think there's a long way to go. I think the good thing is, though, to me, one of the clearest things that emerged from Summer League to me after watching Ivy and Duren in particular is, I don't think this season is going to be about pushing for wins. And so I do think this is still yet another year of patience and development and building. Mm-hmm. And so I don't think the Pistons need to rush any decisions about Isaiah Stewart. So that's what I'll say. I don't think Stewart's shooting is necessarily where it needs to be for him to be a long-term four. I think there are a lot of fours who are going to give him a lot of problems if he's trying to defend them. But I also think they have this season to let him develop and experiment, and they can continuously evaluate over the next season if you know, he's able to develop into that space. So if he can't, then I think he's also like an adequate rotation big, right? Like if he's your first big off the bench, that's also fine, right? Like if he's not your starting five and Duren is, that's also okay too. And that might ultimately be where we end up. And as long as Stu's okay with that, then I think the Pistons can be okay with that as well.
Yeah, I liked how confident he looked in his shot in Summer League. I think he went like 5 of 9 over the 3 games he played. Obviously, 9 threes is not that many, very small sample. Right. But you did like the fact that he looked more comfortable even like stepping into those shots and taking them. But at the same time, a lot of those shots were like pick and pop. And to play the 4, you're going to need to be a little bit more like ball handlery, or a little bit more, there's going to be a lot more like catch and shoot opportunities than like pick and pop opportunities. And so I do kind of wonder if Stewart is better as a defensive 4 and enabling like a switching scheme for the Pistons than as an offensive 4, right? Like, I don't think he's still there as a ball handler. I think he's like an adequate passer for a center, but like probably a below average one for an NBA power forward. And so I agree with you offensively that Stewart's probably not there yet. The thing I will say for him, though, I think he's still like 21 at this point. And so,
he's so young.
There's absolutely reason to think that he can get there. But this does feel a little bit like, if we take away the element of the shooting, this feels like the Pistons are trying to force a square peg into a round hole where there's like, okay, we have all these big men, we have all these centers, we don't have that many like true power forwards on the roster. It's like, let's just play 2 bigs and like see where that goes. And who's one of the most versatile big men we have on the roster? It's Isaiah Stewart. So like, let's see what we got. Let's see what he can do in this role. I don't think playing the 4 like optimizes Isaiah Stewart, but I'm glad he got repetition being able to do it during Las Vegas. Because again, like, Even lineups when he wasn't playing with Jalen Duren, right? When he was playing with a guy like Braxton Key, who we saw that lineup as like the 2 bigs a lot in the first game, a lot over the first couple of games. It's like when Stewart plays with another like non-shooting threat like a Marvin Bagley, it's good for him to be able to be comfortable spacing the floor to give Marvin Bagley a little bit more room to operate. And it's good for Stewart to learn to like attack closeouts, or you know, eat up the space defenses give him with like the Draymond Green immediate dribble handoffs and stuff like that. But as far as like driving all the way to the rim on a closeout consistently, or you know, being a guy that teams feel like they like really have to go out and contest out on the perimeter, like, I don't think that's the case, and I don't think that's in the cards for Stu, even in the future. It's like, I don't want to put a limit on Stu's ceiling, and I don't want others to feel like we're like not as high on Stewart's ability to contribute. But I also don't think like he has to be an NBA power forward to contribute, if that makes sense.
Well, and the thing is, like, the reason I mentioned those 2 bigs is because, you know, this was my experience too. As like, I was a guard my whole life, but it takes a lot of muscle memory to develop a long range shot. Like, it takes years of muscle memory to develop an NBA level 3-point shot. People don't realize how hard it is to make an NBA level 3-point jump shot in a game consistently. So like, if the goal is, as I think it should be, to create enough space for Cade and Bagley to operate in a pick and roll, like a 3-point shot could be one of those things, but maybe it's a corner 3. But like, you know, I think a lot about Antonio McDice. Like, this goes back a long time, but Dice was just deadly from 17 foot, like that baseline jumper from 17 feet. Like, that dude was deadly from there. So like right now in the meta in the NBA, like Chris Paul was really good at this a season ago. There were some other bigs who were really good at this. Like, it doesn't have to be just the 3. Mm-hmm. Like, there might be some other opportunities for Stu to provide just enough space for Bagley and Cade to operate that's not the 3. So I hope the Pistons coaching staff is looking at other out of the box ways than just the 3-point shot, I guess.
We'll say. Yeah. Now, I agree with you. And we, like, remember last year we saw a lot of Stu setting the screens under the rim to seal off the help to give Cade and other guards like driving lanes. That was something that I noticed Jalen Duren, for example, was not doing a very good job at during Las Vegas Summer League. And like that is a technique that like Jalen Duren should absolutely try to absorb from Stewart, because like with his frame, like no one would be able to get through like one of those highway screens set by Jalen Duren. There are other ways to contribute offensively besides the 3-point shot. And I hope we see a little bit more of that from Isaiah Stewart when the regular season starts, especially if they're going to put him in two big lineups with another non-shooting big man. You know, whether that's Jalen Duren in time, whether that's Marvin Bagley for right now. It's like, actually, that's funny, Ben. Like, who would you rather have spacing the floor right now, Isaiah Stewart or Marvin Bagley?
Right? If the answer is no.
Yeah, right. And so, yeah, I hope we get a little bit more offensive creativity with how the Pistons choose to deploy Stewart in, you know, whatever lineup types they choose to go with him with. All right, Ben, next guy I want to talk about, Isaiah Livers. Just kind of did his thing, man. Just filled in the gaps, shot the ball really well in the game against the Wizards, shot the ball less well, but made a lot of impact at plays defensively in the first game against the Trailblazers. Just kind of did his job. What did you think of Isaiah Livers' play during Vegas?
Livers is the savvy veteran, right? Like, yeah. The savvy sophomore.
Yeah.
He's the old sophomore season. Yeah, I like Livers. I think, you know, to me, he hasn't played a lot of minutes, but he just looks like a solid rotation guy. He came out of the Michigan system that I think he just learned how to be a very smart offensive player. Mm-hmm. Who plays within himself and within his system and his skill set, doesn't try to overextend himself, does his job and does it well and does it efficiently. I think the good thing is his skill set fits very nicely into what the Pistons need. I think there's a chance for him to carve out a really nice niche for himself this season. Needs to, I think, prove that he can rebound well at the four defensively. I think if he can do that, he can have a real nice season for the Pistons, because the shooting's going to be there. That's real. I think he needs to prove he can rebound the ball well. If he does, he's going to play. I think he's going to play quite a bit.
I'll do you one better, Ben. I think Isaiah Livers should start.
Interesting. Okay.
I think the starting lineup should be some form of like Cade Cunningham, Jaden Ivey, Sadiq Bey, Isaiah Livers, Isaiah Stewart. It's like, I think if you're going to run the switching scheme the Pistons ran in Summer League, Stewart or Livers flashed enough as a communicator on the defensive end and as like a weak side help guy that you can get away with the lack of rebounding, especially considering, you know, Sadiq Bey is a really good rebounder for his position. Cade Cunningham is an above average rebounder for a point guard, right? Isaiah Stewart, great boxer outer guy who, the rebound rate for his team goes up when he is on the floor, even if he is not grabbing all of those rebounds. And so I think that lineup gives you that is a very young starting lineup, but that gives you the best mix of shooting and like team defense that the Pistons like want to play with. It's like, do I think that lineup actually ends up starting? Like, no, I think Marvin Bagley probably ends up starting, or, you know, Alec Burks is in there somewhere, or like Corey Joseph is in there somewhere, just like waiting. Lance. I know, right? Like he's just hanging around, and Dwayne's like, oh yeah, Corey, what's up, man? but no, Isaiah Livers just really impressed me. And I think he is a lock for a top 8 rotation spot at this time. Like I think he should start. I understand if he won't, but he absolutely needs to be part of the rotation moving forward for this team next year. He's too good at his role, and his role is so valuable that he's too valuable not to be playing consistent like 25 minutes a night. Absolutely. It's like he was just It's like he does all the little things and shoots the heck out of the ball. And it's like, what more could you ask for from a like 22-year-old like bench guy, right? Just do your job and shoot the ball, and he does it well. Yeah. So I'm a big fan of Isaiah Livers. Jalen Duren and Isaiah Livers were the real like bright spots of summer league for me. And obviously Jaden Ivey would have gotten there had he like not gotten hurt in the in the second game.
If we can convince Jaden Ivey to rebound a little bit defensively, like if we can convince him that if he rebounds, he gets to just run.
Like, yeah, you can grab and go.
Right. If we can convince him to do that, which his rebound rate in college is not overly impressive, but if we can convince him to do that, then maybe he can compensate as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely. A guy who only played one game and did not show as much as people would like was Killian Hayes. Killian only had, I think, like 7 points, had a ton of fouls in his only game, but did a lot of Killian stuff, right? Good perimeter defense, nice utilization of him in the switching scheme, made a catch and shoot three, found Jalen Duren for a couple easy baskets. Ben, like, okay, Killian Hayes was the 7th overall pick 2 years ago. But now it seems very clear that he will not be a starting level player for this team. Like as with his current skill level and as the way the team is currently constructed right now, he's not going to start. It's like, are our expectations just like completely shifted for what a contribution from Killian Hayes like looks like in year three?
All right, I have a very different theory about summer league for Killian Hayes, and that is,
go for it.
Killian Hayes was not there for Killian Hayes. Killian Hayes was there to take the game one pressure off of Jaden Ivey, and that is the only reason he was there. That is my theory. He was there by design for one game. That was reported, I think, by James Edwards III. Mm-hmm. That was the plan from the get-go. And so he was there to handle the ball so that Jaden Ivey didn't have to be the primary ball handler, and he was there just to facilitate the game one jitters, and that's my theory. I don't think he was there to prove anything about himself or his own game. He was there and he was given instructions just to do that. So that's my theory. So I'm not going to read anything into his performance or lack of performance. I don't think he was there to try to prove anything about himself. In terms of what to expect about his talent moving forward, I mean, I think you're right. I think your assessment is correct, but I don't think Summer League, I'm not going to read anything about Summer League into that. He's clearly not going to start over Cade. He's clearly not going to start over Ivy.
Mm-hmm.
But that's fine. I mean, if he's coming off the bench and he's the 7th pick, I don't care what pick he was. If he can prove next year that he's a valuable quality, like backup point guard / two guard who, you know, not particularly a good shooter, but can defend and can handle the ball and can distribute and can run in transition. I mean, he still theoretically can guard 1-3, right? Like he's got the length to potentially do that. If this season he can take the step to do one, like if he can have one go-to thing for his own offense, whether that's finishing, drawing fouls, or some sort of, you know, some sort of finishing, whether that's, you know, 3-point shooting or a floater or something, like that's the thing to me that he needs to do this season. He does enough of the other stuff to me that he's a viable bench player. Like I will argue that he does enough other good stuff, non-scoring wise, to justify his role in the league, that I'm fine with Killian Hayes being part of the future moving forward. If he can do the one thing offensively to give him some sort of weapon, right? Like he needs to make the defense respect him at least one thing. His defense is already top. Like he's already, I don't know. Is he the best defender on the team in terms of on the ball now that Jeremy's gone? I would say so. I mean, unless Alec Burks is, but I would say he is. He rebounds well. He passes well. Like I said, he's versatile. He can guard just about any position on the perimeter. So I don't know, give him that one offensive go-to thing that he does that the defense has to respect. And I think it opens up all of the facilitating and playmaking that he's already naturally very good at. And I think you have a very respectable and potentially very dangerous second unit floor general. And look, I think if you pair him with Hami, He probably also gets minutes with Ivy. Mm-hmm. And depending on how you run the big man rotation with that second unit, like, yeah, there could be some dry minutes where you just don't have a lot of shooting, but you could also have some pretty scary minutes of transition where you're forcing other second units to run a whole lot. And that's not something a lot of second units are good at. So, yeah, I'm not ready to throw the towel on Killian by any stretch of the imagination. I do think you're right. He's not proven himself to be a starter. But if you can recalibrate your expectations and say, okay, he's not what we wanted the seventh overall pick to be, but he can still be a quality player, then I think you can get on board with me that he could be part of the core moving forward.
I like your conspiracy theory that he's just there to like hold Jaden Ivey's hand during the first game. I like that. That's funny. I did think there were improvements over last year that were visible, but they didn't necessarily like translate into more production, which is what people are looking for from Killian. Like, for example, we saw him utilize his offhand a little bit more as part of like being a ball handler. Like, yes, that didn't like meant he like finished with the right, but it did mean he was more comfortable like driving right, going left, and like making plays from there. I think that's something that'll be really important from him. We did see he made one catch and shoot three and had like another three like waved off. And so like I do hope the shooting gets there eventually. It's like, you remember early in the year, like in a very small sample, he was one of the better 3-point shooters on the team. And then he got the thumb injury or the finger injury or whatever. And then his percentage is cratered. And so you hope that, you know, knowing that he's coming in, going to be playing off the ball more, you know, going to be in his role as a bench guy, like with the expectations set like lower than they've been in the past, you do kind of hope he unlocks at least like the ability to be a catch and shoot threat off the ball to help like a Cade or an Ivy or in a bench lineup, like, you know, a Hami or somebody, like keep it going. I agree that I would have liked to see Killian play at least the second game. Like, especially after, it's like, you can't predict this, but like, especially after Jaden Ivey got hurt, it would have been really useful for like Jalen Duren and Isaiah Stewart to be out there, like playing with a guy like Killian. In particular, I want to see like Killian and Jalen Duren like tied at the hip. Like Killian, again, is just going to make a guy like Jalen Duren's life like so much easier at the NBA level. And Killian's been like looking for a guy who can do what Jalen Duren can do in bench lineups like for a long time in his NBA career. And so like, yeah, I think that Killian is like definitely a rotation player for this team. Doesn't have to start. Like, in time, we will get over the expectations of him being like the number 7 overall pick and you know, what that was supposed to be. But yeah, I think he can. If we can find a way for him to get a little bit better offensively, he can excel in his role the way a guy like an Isaiah Livers like has so far. And that will make for like a very like complete Pistons like 8-man rotation, which is what you're looking for in time. We just have to fill that out with some more small forwards, a little bit more perimeter shooting, a little bit more defense, and we'll be good to go. This thing will be cracking.
He's kind of playing himself into like a Troy Weaver second draft reclamation project scenario, to be perfectly honest.
That's really funny. The idea that like Troy Weaver, if he wasn't on the team, if he was in like, I don't know, he was in like OKC someplace, and Troy Weaver was like, hey, like, we kind of liked him. He was like, yeah, we can sign him to a low deal. Like, yeah, why not? That's really funny. Yeah, man, I think that's everybody that we like probably really need to talk about. You know, Braxton Key got his time to shine when, you know, the rotation guys we expect to play a lot, you know, were sat down. We saw some nice moments from like a Cameron McGusty and the Boeheims. But yeah, I think that's what really matters for Summer League, is how the play from these second and third year guys and from the rookies really went. And now that Summer League is basically over, what do you want to do with the pod, Ben? Like, I think it might be time for the dads of Pistons Twitter to go take a nap.
Yeah, I think I started the pod by saying Summer League is over because that's how it feels to me, even though it's not. So, yeah, man, I think a hiatus is in order. I know I'm taking a hiatus from I'm taking a hiatus from social media for a little while. Cool the Jets. Unless something interesting happens, right? I think it's okay. I think it's okay to take a little break. I know some of the beat writers are doing the same thing. Those guys obviously work a little harder than we do. But I think that's okay.
No, I absolutely agree. And so, yeah, will you, if something happens, you'll hear from us. If not, we'll put out the feelers and the posters and for what to do when the preseason kind of rolls around. But yeah, it'll be a nice long hiatus for the Detroit Bad Boys podcast. But in the meantime, you can still follow Ben on Twitter at BR Gulker. If he's going to take a social media hiatus, that's fine. You still see him in the comments at Detroit Bad Boys. Especially when someone brings up Jalen Duren and his athleticism, we will both just kind of be jumping all over that, much like Jalen Duren. You can follow me on Twitter at Last Chance. That's at LazChance. This has been the Detroit Bad Boys podcast, and yeah, we'll see you guys when the hiatus ends. Don't know when that's going to be, but we'll figure it out. Thanks for listening, and we'll talk to you guys later.